And so, Liv, why don't you give us some ideas of what's going on? Tripp will be joining us in a few minutes.
Yeah, our first guest will be a lady, Elizabeth McDonald. And Elizabeth is the director of the AHAM Association in Asheboro. Mm-hmm. AHAM means the Association for Happiness for All Mankind.
Now, isn't that the one where the founder of it was inspired by Ramana Maharshi?
Yes. He was inspired by Ramana Maharshi. This is Ramana Baba, and he is Swami Muktananda gave him his spiritual name of Ramana, and then Ganeshan gave him his other spiritual name, Arunachala, and since he has taken a more of a role as the spiritual granddaddy, mm-hmm. There as a Baba, and Elizabeth has been...
She does more of the practical details of keeping the
well. She's been there alive from the get go,
uh-huh.
And she's really taken it out on her own insights and continuing.
And so she's going to come here, and what's she going to talk about in particular?
Well, we're going to talk about something.
Whatever tickles your gullet, or whatever.
They have a AHAM has a. A roadmap that to spiritual awareness that's somewhat secular but draws on the religions of the world, and more specifically Advaita Vedanta, which comes from southern India, the Vedas, and from the teachings of Nrsimhadatta Maharaj.
And why don't you tell people a little bit about who you pronounce his name, Nataraj, is.
Nrsimhadatta Maharaj?
Yeah.
I've only read his books. My friend, mm-hmm. friend Ganeshan was a very intimate friend with Nrsimhadatta. But his guru simply gave him an instruction that you are not your body. Period.
And
that's it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing I've always liked about Nataraj's books, Nrsimhadatta. Okay. And forgive me for not pronouncing his name. It's sort of like the wizard. I have read his books. In fact, actually, they're published locally. You should get in contact with the guy behind Acorn Books and drag him in here sometime.
From Durham, yeah.
Yeah, from Durham. But the they're actually very similar to Ramana Maharshi, whom we've talked about before on the show. And they're sort of earthier in a way. His metaphors are earthier, but he lived in town, and I think he was married, and
he had a little tobacco shop,
and a little tobacco shop, yeah. Where he sat and rolled beedies, yes. Which are these tobacco cigarettes that are rolled with these other kind of. Let's see here. So let's continue with some of your ideas about what you're planning on. So the show's name is going to be changed from Touchstones to Wisdom Soft Whisper. We'll have it's a webcast, and the podcast will be available through communityradio.coop. And are you going to actually develop your own website for this show, too?
It'll be under the Wizard LLC.
Yeah, so it'll be at that website that we gave you, the Wizard LLC. www.arunachala.com.
And we'll duplicate the archives there as well.
Right. And including, they may also have a few select previous shows from Touchstones that they might add on just for continuity's sake. But for the most part, it's going to be a new show. Now, you've got a different idea of how you want to do the show than the way I've been doing mine. So why don't you tell people what that is?
Well, I'll start by quoting Nisargadatta.
Okay.
People come here with such profound concepts of spirituality. They think they have spiritual knowledge, and they want me to give them a clean certificate. This I don't do. I blast their concepts. All knowledge is ignorance. So what the program will facilitate is a journey from knowledge, letting knowledge dissipate and residing in the residue of formless wisdom.
And by formless wisdom, you mean knowledge that is not ignorance. Or do you mean something else?
It's a divine ignorance, you might call it. Don Frijon call it divine ignorance. It's where you trust the mystery, but the mystery enjoins you.
Okay. So, now, because actually the knowledge is ignorance is one of the aphorisms in, I think it's in the Shiva Sutras, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, Ganesha calls it knowledge is learned ignorance.
Yeah, and that's a helpful, you know, then people can get say, oh, well, those are all those bad habits I learned, you know, including language. but I think the idea here is to shock you out of, the habitual mind, our habitual stance of how we think and believe and feel about things, and we think that this is the only way things can possibly be. And that is depressing. I wonder why people kill themselves occasionally.
In an information age, information is spilling out all over the place. Cats are getting out of the bag in every corner. And for eons, human beings have defined their higher development or paradigm shifts into realities that reveal past realities as not as real as one would have supposed, and it would fall within the framework of a religion or a path, but the cat's out of the bag, and folks can approach peace and love and understanding and not necessarily be a part or join of a religion, but yet it doesn't refute what religion is. It edifies it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why on Touchstones I gave it an emphasis on spirituality and religion was that in most people's experience in terms of their lives, where they attach their ultimate concern is religiously formulated. Now, if you were raised without a religion, and there are plenty of us out there who are, and where religion is something kind of strange, you don't know why people believe those weird things, and it takes a lot of study to figure out even vaguely why one should understand those weird things. Religion can seem kind of strange, but even a person who has no religion or has not been raised in one is going to have within themselves a natural, from what I call this ultimate concern. It's a phrase that's taken from Paul Tillich, who was a Christian theologian, liberal theologian back in the 40s and 50s, when he was in the United States. But the importance of the idea of is that this is a natural longing that all human beings have, you know, to authentically know yourself is one way to put it.
That's exactly right. Learn thyself. Understand thyself.
It may be that you would, some people might formulate it as to know what is really real, might be another way of, and they might, to know what's really real in the world. What can I trust, you know? Who can I love? And is love real, are all people faithless and shallow and selfish like me? these are issues that people deal with. And some people, everybody deals with them to a degree, and then usually we do have a shutdown.
Same spiritual water thinches all the different thirst for.
Mm-hmm. Right. Same water will cure the thirst no matter if you're asking for who am I or what is this.
Whether you call it agua, H2O, or water, or just some of that.
there is something, though, that I don't know if we can call it the big sleep or not, but the big sleep is death, but the little sleep, which is there are people who do feel this ultimate concern to a degree, but they don't feel comfortable with it. When you have an awakening of consciousness, which is somewhere in your adolescent years, when you stop being a child and start becoming not quite an adult, but just you have all the things, you become sexually mature and you have these raging hormones. Everybody sort of rushes into a sense of ultimate concern. And then there's this kind of, gradual shutdown. People aren't uncomfortable with the idea or with the quest. This seems to be a general experience that I've run into. And there are lots of people, if you strip away their general ideas of how they get along in the world, and you try to say, well, what is your ultimate concern? They don't feel too happy about it. They don't. They resist your probings. This is why I have so few friends, as a matter of fact, is because I sometimes and have always, since I was an adolescent, been probing in places that people don't want me to probe.
as the mind looks out, it bifurcates.
Mm-hmm.
It says left or right or wrong, up or down, avoid or embrace.
Mm-hmm.
It's constantly bifurcating and duplicating the amount of words around a series of thoughts.
And so you get a couple of them that you like. God is good. God loves me. I'm okay. Okay, that's it. That's my ultimate concern.
But sooner or later, that becomes a very frustrating process.
The bifurcating.
Because there's no end to it.
That's right. And it's confusing. You feel confused.
It's growing exponentially. There's this huge word balloon growing exponentially, and it just won't stop.
Mm-hmm.
If the attention reaches the place of futility, reaches the place of diminishing returns, then the attention can turn back around and ask, who wants to know? Who am I? Who is the perceiver?
And so then you just have to retrace all those twists and turns? No, you don't have to do that.
You turn to the one who appears to be making the choices in the bifurcations. And you put the attention straight on the thought of I, or me, or mine. That little pinch is constantly saying me, me, my mind.
Yeah, that's our innate chatterbox egotism that many of us experience in a day-to-day fashion.
So they're basically different ways, different schools to quiet this little voice in the head down soft enough to where the vision, the outlook, doesn't stop at the skull. It goes on infinitely in all directions. This, some people call it the third eye or awakening or lots of names and phrases. It doesn't call itself anything. But that's one's own domicile of the wise and peace. And it's available with or without a religion.
Yes. In other words, one's ultimate concern doesn't have to be couched in religious terms.
Everybody's on the path. No one's left out.
Mm-hmm. This is, everyone has an ultimate concern, whether they're comfortable in expressing it or not. They still have it at the bottom of themselves when you're all alone at night. You know it's there.
And everyone has their season of being ripe.
And by that you mean?
Not every flower blooms at the same time. There's a season for ripeness.
Mm-hmm.
And folks have a season for ripeness. And they're prepared. And the world prepares you to turn around. Because sooner or later, you're frustrated to the point that all your remedies are exhausted for a lasting happiness and practical wisdom. They're exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
So then one turns around and looks at oneself, and as one tries to find oneself, there's nothing to find.
Well, that sounds like a paradox, and that might actually be very scary if put that way to some people.
That could be scary, yes.
You know,
you can look and look and look. There's only free attention. That's all.
So, okay, let's characterize free attention.
Dreamless sleep.
Another way that sometimes used is listening to the silence.
You're driving in your car.
Mm-hmm.
You're going down the road. You got to pay attention, which is a good exercise. You might slam into something.
Right.
You're going down the road, and all of a sudden, you're still, and the road is moving. And you can go on down the road for several miles and not even know it.
Yeah. Well, actually, that might be, I'd hate to think, you know, you might have gone into a diabetic coma, but no,
but everything's working.
Oh, that's a good reason. You don't slam into the nearest.
It all works.
This nearest post, yeah.
Another example is what they call synchronicity. You find yourself going through a little spurt that everything is perfect. Everything is falling into place, and the odds of that happening are way on out there. And then it'll happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Just to show you, those odds are even more way out there. And the common denominator of those little experiences is non-doership. There's nobody home when those things happen. When the football star can keep his feet in the end zone and grab that ball out of the air, those moments when you talk to those guys, they describe the phenomena of synchronicity, what they call the zone.
Yeah, they're just it's just happening like a dance, and
yes.
there's no effort. Actually, that's it's been used a lot of times as one of the ways to characterize the beginning, the dawning of this. What was the original term you used? Attention? What did you call it?
Wisdom.
No, we called it something else. It's something to do with alert, attention, something. What was it? Do you remember?
No.
No, okay, neither do I. So much for, but whatever that attention is, I mean, some people speak of it as effortless attention, you know, effortless consciousness or effortless effort. That's it. There's that, you know, it just happens in this way.
It's so exponentially overwhelming that the mind can't grasp it, because the mind arises out of it and goes back into it. The sun is not greater than the sky.
Right. And we're not talking about a thinking exercise here. Like, effortless attention is something you already actually do. We're all effortlessly attentive at this point.
What blinds us is it's the mind's addiction to itself, to where it wants to think and think and think and think and think, rather than just to think to accomplish something and then stop.
Yeah.
You can use your hand to pick up something, but it doesn't mean you're moving your hand all the time. But you might find people who've got a strange twitch and they're raising their hand all the time.
Yeah, and it's actually in Sanskrit, there's a very simple term for effortless attention, which is, you know, which is sometimes translated consciousness or chit, which, you know, just, you know, C-I-T, so chit. Now, what's interesting is the mind thing that I think you've just been talking about is chitta. So what's the difference between chit and chitta? The ta is that reflexiveness, you know, of saying, of, and one of the ways that that's exercised is in the exercise of thinking or feeling along certain lines incessantly. You know, me, 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 right? When I wake up in the morning, right? You know, me, 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 me. And you go through the whole day singing various songs of me, or, you know, and if you mention anybody else, it's only in conjunction with this incessant, you know, reflecting thing. And of course, thoughts are a continuation of this thing. And then when you go into dreaming, well, then you just have chitta, which doesn't hang on to our continuous objects that we experience or perceive in the world. So things are really flexible, you know. So you can be swimming and floating and falling and climbing a thing all at the same time, because you know the reflexivity is just reflexivity, because it's consciousness in consciousness, dreams and symbols, and everything is ambiguous. And then when you fall into dreamless sleep, this is where the ta relaxes. It falls away from the chit.
Is that the object?
What ta? Well, ta is the reflex. You know, in consciousness, con is the reflex, is the ta of and shisness or.
So the. My take on it,
yeah,
is that consciousness is the subject and the object making up the complete picture of what we refer to as world or universe.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness is what we have in dreamless sleep that stays aware during all the other states.
Yeah, that's chit. That's chit without the ta. And, you know, and of course, they're now in the classic Vedantic formulation, they say that there's three, they characterize this ultimate state in three ways. One is consciousness, which we've talked about a little bit, as pure awareness. And so now here's the paradox, though, which I think we talked about a little bit last week, which is how can you be aware, you know? How is awareness possible when you're in dreamless sleep and there doesn't seem to be anything going on?
That's because the mind is quiet.
The mind is quiet. Yeah. See, so if we're identified with the mind.
We're identified with the mind. We're identified with consciousness. which involves an ego eye.
Yeah, and that's
and
the ta.
The object.
Yeah, that's the chitta.
So that creates the whole scheme.
Yeah.
And really, if we have the awareness of dreamless sleep in the what we call the waking state, then the waking state appears transparent.
It appears almost like a dream.
Yes, it appears as a dream.
Yeah.
And then one recognizes one's own sense of identity, not as the talking voice in the head or the form of the body, but that nothingness within which everything is appearing and disappearing. And so that's the paradigm shift that brings about the conversion to an immortal outlook, as opposed to a mortal outlook that brings suffering and fear.
Okay. Let's take the other one of the classic terms. There are three classic terms for this ultimate state,
right.
Sat, Chit, Ananda. We did Chit, so let's do Sat. Might be a little more confusing. Let's do Sat. And Sat is usually translated as being, right?
Yes.
And so Sat and Chit are identical. This is, ultimate being is the same as Chit, ultimate awareness. Now, let's talk about dreaming. Sat in dreaming would appear to be what?
In a dream state, if you start to wake up a little bit, just an iota, mm-hmm. you can take your hand and easily pass it through a wall.
Right.
In the waking state, you can't.
So sat in the dream state is porous, and the images are things.
Yes, more subtle.
It's more subtle. And now in a waking state, sat is being as we as the world is perceived. So, though it may be I can fly in my dreams, but I don't know. I can't necessarily fly when I wake up unless I get on an airplane or something.
In the daydream.
In the waking state.
And the waking state brings in the same state of dreamless sleep and recognizes the daydream state as immortal. It doesn't have the sting of mortality, the fear of death. It's plucked away because of the forms are not nouns. There's no nouns. There's nothing that can perish.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this infinite theater within which all things arise.
So in some ways, the natural egotistical idea that we have about the world, which sits under a lot of our perceptions, whether, expressed realistically or not, is that this world, this exterior world that and waking, is permanent. That it has a sense of permanency.
It has a sense of permanency.
Yeah, and that sense of permanency that we think in the world is the nature of Sat. However, it is not the nature of this world, which, most of us, one way or the other, learned this in the hard way, as things change and various things happen that go along, including our own aging and so forth. But so that we find out that the world is not permanent in the way we think it is, yet there is a permanency that we're looking for, and we think that permanency is in the world, and this is this. And I don't know what the reflex is for Sat. It could be maybe Satva, but I'm not. I wouldn't necessarily say that it is.
But the theater
mm-hmm.
the permanency in the theater is the movie screen, not the images on the movie screen.
Right.
So that what we perceive as permanency is motion, is all in motion,
right,
one way or another, down to the atomic scale.
But we're having a longing for the permanency of the screen rather than the play on the screen.
Yes. Once we're aware of the screen, you go back to the movie and without the fear.
Mm-hmm. And some ways, so again, becoming, it's difficult. I'm just trying to use the metaphor of being, and I'm without bringing in Chit, you know,
yeah,
which is what I'm used
is.
To do. Yeah, being it is, you know, it
being is.
Being
is, it's causeless. It's always been. Is it is from now on.
Mm-hmm. And it's also one of the reasons why we may have a tendency through a Chit or whatever that we may misdirect our understanding of the world. In other words, we're seeking in the world in our permanency. We're looking for this sense of finality, certainty, or whatever we want to call it.
We propel ourselves in motion.
Yeah.
Through the water that we're looking for.
Yeah. Now that's actually a good, maybe a good contrast, because usually when you think of Sat, you think of something that's beyond movement and non-movement. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be still, but it's beyond moving and non-moving. It's beyond those.
The definition of Arunachala.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the geographical icon for peace or Shiva or the father principle in southern India, is that which is immovable.
Mm-hmm.
So solid nothing becomes that which is the immovable. Anything that moves within the immovable is recognized. A thought, anything that moves is recognized. But that which moves is the illusion, and it takes attention, which is at rest and free, and pulls it towards that which is moving, ultimately incarnating that stillness into a sense of moving. And the paradigm shifts, and there's an incarnation.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the classic ways of understanding Sat in this sense. So in some ways, Sat is the true permanency of what you might say dreamless sleep. But actually, probably it isn't the permanency of dreamless sleep so much as it's the permanency of oneness.
Yeah.
No otherness.
There's no other. In dreamless sleep, there's no other.
See, so the thing we look for when we're awake and or dreaming and we have a desire for is this sense of oneness that we already are, but in the process of the shifting and changing images in the dream, the shifting and changing experiences and perceptions we have in waking, we are forgetting that.
And going out and bifurcating.
Yeah.
Adding more and more and more and more.
Yeah. And the you know, so it's sort of like more movement doesn't lead to no movement. You know? But now, of course, in the classic formulation of Satchitananda, there's Ananda. And that's usually translated as bliss. So let's deal with bliss in this world. How would you characterize that?
Desirelessness.
Oh, see, now I would say that the way I would characterize bliss in this world is fulfilling one's desire. You know, that's eating the cherry pie, buddy. That's, you know, that's drinking the wine. You know, that's feeling the intoxication.
Side. That's the pleasure side. And that's trickery. There's a nature of the waking dream to trick us. In the East, they may refer to it as Maya or Leela, but there's a certain element of trickery and seduction.
Yeah, and also for us who are variously disarranged, addiction. You know, it's addictive. You know, you become addicted to feeling a certain way, having a certain thing, doing something. And actually, it's kind of interesting. You can also find your way, though you're addicted to something, you also find that it gives you less and less pleasure as time goes on.
That's correct.
Which is, you know, so there's this incredible diminishing of pleasure. So then you have to look for pleasure in other places. And who knows how that eventually matures. We're in this morass of pleasure seeking, which is the way that we exercise ananda, mis-exercise ananda. And, of course, now the question is how would, in a waking state, how does one exercise ananda? How does one find bliss if it isn't, scratching my itch when I'm got a tickle?
Well, it's a paradox, because trying to find it is a free will gesture that says, I don't have it. So the trying to find it is separating you from yourself. It puts it out as an other, and then you go try to find it and suffer because you haven't found it. So it's giving up the search itself. It's the search is the suffering. Happiness is inherent in causeless being. Is everybody, when they're deep asleep, is happy.
Yeah, and the way you might recognize that is, I don't know, and there are a lot of people who suffer various degrees of insomnia. And part of the reason that some people have insomnia, at least the way I understand it for myself, is you have a sense of anxiety, unresolved conflicts, and that kind of thing will tend to cause you to resist easy sleep.
And there's histories of masters who have been able to simply remain in the dreamless state through the evening without giving up the waking, the daydream state. Ramana Maharshi was one who was rarely caught getting some shut-eye.
Oh, yeah. This is unfortunately, I had a friend who attempted to do that and killed himself by falling asleep in his bathtub and not being able to wake himself up. So I had a friend who really, he shouldn't have been doing what he was doing, but he did it. And I'm still pissed off at him for dying on me. But the, don't practice staying awake forever as a way of pretending you're enlightened. It don't work. It'll lead to true psychosis quicker than you know.
bring dreamless sleep state into the daydream.
Mm-hmm.
And for me personally, it's a method that works and wears down that tendency, but it doesn't do the whole job.
Mm-hmm.
And that I have to, for me, I have to let go a sense of the mind and body doing something to extricate myself from being identified with that form. So some people call it faith, some people call it lucky, some people call it putting a capital M on the mystery, some people call it serendipity, synchronicity, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But that trust that you bring into the here and now,
mm-hmm.
that everything is unfolding as it should, will give you the sustain you need to remain in a natural state for a period of time.
So one of the things you're saying is that this idea of trust, I guess another way of looking at that would also be that one sense of grace, you know, a sense
Same
of
thing.
Divine favor that seems
Same
to come
thing.
Out of nowhere and for no good reason. definitely not. I'm not definitely undeserved. It's not deserved. There's no such thing as deserved grace, buddy.
Amen.
You know, not unlike gravy, but it's not, no deserved grace. And but you have, and so if you understand grace is this sense of bliss of Ananda, and so another aspect of bliss or desirelessness, as you first referred to it, would be peace.
Peace when the paradigm shifts, and the sense of being goes from being a noun as a voice in the middle of your head, and the paradigm shifts to being that within which it is arising, there can be a literal breathtaking bliss as one first experiences immortal existence.
Right. Now, okay, we've done a little bit with the nature of desire and desirelessness in waking state. So let's talk about it a little bit as it appears in dreams. Well, the nice thing about dreams, if you desire something, it usually pops up right in front of you right that instant. There ain't no delayed gratification in dreams. In fact, that's probably a shame because sometimes you want them to linger a little longer than they will. They keep changing so quickly. But one of the things about dreams in terms of this desirelessness, how does Ananda then affect one's dreaming? How does desirelessness affect? How does this peace affect one in the dream state?
If one is surrendered, then whatever happens, whether it's in the daydream or the night dream, happens effortlessly. When it's not happening effortlessly and one is felt confined or trapped into a situation, the dream can go into a nightmare pretty quick. But if the identification is not on the voice in the head but is on the theater or the screen, then whatever plays out. Even if there's pain in it, there's no suffering for the sense of being.
So there can be a sense of detachment in the dreaming that
yes.
you're saying, that even though I'm experiencing terror right now, it's like this is terror, but you're not in the thraldom of terror.
Yeah, if you feel terror, whether it's in a dream or awake, if you put your attention into that knot that's in your gut, and it really gets tight, just by that'll let go. It's always a great tool. Go to the knot. Stay with the knot. The knot will let go, and there'll be pure peace right behind it. And in most cases, when that knot goes away and you've accepted that within which caused that knot, that which caused the knot will go away at the same time. It's miraculous.
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe next week when we're talking about Sophia with Aunt Loomis, I've got a story I want to tell. But I think it'll be tangential right now. But maybe it'll be able to come up next week about dreaming, and specifically because of the goddess images in the dream. But the... And this idea of desirelessness and grace. But, okay, so...
And desirelessness, you can fall into a trap of desiring desirelessness.
Yeah, and that's a pretty common one for neophyte yogis.
Yeah. Now you're paying some compound interest on this thing when you should be going the other way.
Uh-huh.
So to accept one's everything. And if we've got plenty of time. I'd like to read this little piece from Hafiz. I think that's how you say it.
Mm-hmm. Hafiz.
Hafiz.
Yeah.
Now is the time to know that all that you do is sacred. Now, why not consider a lasting truth with yourself and God? Now is the time to understand that all your ideas of right and wrong were just a child's training wheels to be laid aside when you can finally live with ferocity and love. Hafiz is a divine envoy whom the Beloved has written a holy message upon. My dear, please tell me, why do you still throw sticks at your heart and God? What is it in this sweet voice inside that incites you to fear? Now is the time for the world to know that every thought and action is sacred. This is the time for you to deeply compute the impossibility that there is anything but grace. Now is the season to know that everything you do is sacred.
And so you were reading from a book that includes some poems by Hafiz.
As I understand it, in Iran, this is more widely read than the Quran.
Hafiz and Attar, these are different poets, Persian poets, both of whom preceded Jalaluddin Rumi, who was, and his book, the Mathnawi, is often called the Second Quran. So these are the three great world poets from Persia. Hafiz's writings have been floating around in a variety of translations for a long time. There's an interesting story about one of the translators with that. His name was Paul Smith. He lived in Australia. Probably still around. He's probably still kicking around, though I haven't heard much of him. He did a full translation of Hafiz's writings and as best he could. And, and he was working with translations. He wasn't a Persian scholar. And, he did, and while he was doing the translations, he was visited a number of times in his dreams by Hafiz and by other saints who guided him in his deliberations. So it was quite a quite a profound experience. I believe that's in his introduction to his translation of Hafiz, which I don't know if is still available or not. But definitely, as far as mysticism goes, Hafiz and Attar, who's one of the books that Attar did was The Conference of the Birds, which got reworked by Chaucer in The Parliament of the Birds, which is another version of the Attar work. Back to desirelessness, and another thing about desirelessness then is that it does actually seem to take place in the now. Another way of maybe cultivating desirelessness is rather than trying to oppose your desires with desirelessness, which doesn't work, in my point of view, is you find what's in your life, what's going on now, with something that you're contented with, and pay attention to that contentment.
And be that.
Yeah, and just be contented. You know,
no matter what it is.
Whatever it is.
There's no costume that's any closer to the truth than any other costume.
Right.
And it'd be boring if we all had the same uniform.
Yeah. And with that sense of contentment, as things, within that contentment is this persistent desirelessness.
Yeah. That's so, when one can truly be oneself.
Yeah. Now, let's take the desirelessness into the dreamless sleep to the degree that we can. And in some ways, one of the classic statements about, how do you know you're in dreamless sleep, since, there's no experience of your mind in dreamless sleep. And you say, well, you wake up, even though you don't remember it, you feel refreshed. So where did that refreshment come from? It came from being in dreamless sleep. You don't know it directly, but you know it indirectly because of the consequence.
Because the mind can't hold that which is dreamless sleep within the mechanism of the mind itself.
Yeah, which is this reflexive experience and reflection on experience. So this subject-predicate movement of the citta, so we were talking about earlier.
And, 70, 80 years of life, and the brain and the mind dies.
Yeah, and that little tributary of selfness just flows right back into the ocean, and there's no trace of it that have ever been over the sands of endless time.
Yes.
But the...
So it's a benign sacrifice.
What is obsessed with yourself?
Form's going to end. Every dream ends. Every day ends. Everything ends.
Right.
So, but it's a benign ending. They're all benign endings.
Yeah.
You don't happen again, and things have all gone to pieces or something. You happen again. It's just so there's no. There's only one ocean. There's only one. There's only one.
Yeah.
So
is that W-O-N or O-N-E or?
Well, the W-O-N's got some issues.
Yeah, right.
The O-N-E. There's not room for two. So everything is sacrificed into the true one. Everything is sacrificed. And that's where we have true communion with ourself and our Lord.
Yeah, it would be fun sometime to take a look at the classic Bodhisattva vow, which is done through a variety of angles. But the classic one is, the summary is, no matter how innumerable beings are, I vow not to enter enlightenment until they do. And relate that as a practice, as a possible way of looking at the practice of what a bodhisattva might actually be to some of this state of satchitananda.
Yeah, when it's surrendered and everything is happening, there's no doership there. What was karma becomes dharma, because there's no doership. It still keeps happening. A person may experience the fruits of their past actions, be they good or bad, but they're benign, and everything is a teaching to one another. In the waking up process, there's no one closer to teaching than any other. The puzzle is put together in such a magnificent way that it works in all directions simultaneously. The handwriting on the wall is perfect.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, as the sands of time begin to run out, I did want to bring up one other point, which we can probably only touch upon in the briefest sense, which is the waking, dreaming, and deep sleep, though have their obvious discrete levels where they are, But in another way, they're all present.
Yes,
at the same time.
That's the fourth state. That's what is referred to as the fourth state, is to be aware of the dreamless sleep state at the same time being in the daydream state.
And the same time being awake.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the way that this is easily discussed is obviously we're supposedly awake now, since we're aware of the world. You know, I know I can't put my hand through the table without something breaking. You know, so that's awake, and that's at one level of consciousness. At the same time, I'm having thoughts and images and feelings inside myself, which is the daydream. It's part of the daydream, and that's going on simultaneously now. And then behind that, there's a sort of a backdrop, you know, a curtain of silence, of serenity, of equanimity, and of ease, which is dreamless sleep, which is, you know, holding, nesting, as it were, all of my sense of the world exteriorly and all of my sense of the world interiorly. And then underneath that is this ease of peace. Now, some people may not be as aware of that presence of dreamless sleep, and that's actually why people meditate or learn to meditate.
Yes,
is to become aware of the natural silence that is us, that surrounds us and holds us at all times, and cultivates that.
Yeah, stay up while the sun sets and look at the stars.
Yeah.
Because while the sun's up, the mind's going, that's all you see.
Yeah. And normally we are obsessively oriented towards waking when we're awake. We dream and in our dreams. We're in our dreams, but we don't even try to remember them when we wake up again. And in a dreamless sleep, we're in it or we're not in it, depending upon what's going on. And so we have this sort of exterior focus. And, you know, but, you know, life is more rounded, I guess would be the easiest way of putting it. Let me give you the last word before we wrap things up here, Wizard.
Well, I'm looking forward to a season of abiding a while in the state of wisdom. And I hope we can be of some interest to the listeners here. Also, I know that we're gaining a global audience via the streaming cast on the computer, which I think is just marvelous. Literally have sang around the world.
Right. So the Whispers Soft, Wisdom's Soft Whisper, Whispers Soft Wisdom. Now, Wisdom's Soft Whisper is going to be the new name of Touchstones, and we'll have its launching will be, what, on the 17th, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so you have been listening to Paul Nash and Wizard Baldur. And